Good morning and happy Mother's Day to those that deserve that greeting. What do you do when you're given a passage to preach on in 16 verses names 17 different places? Okay. We're not going to just do a map, but you do have to come up with a creative title of some kind. Paul moves around a lot in today's passage. 10 of the verses are basically just about moving around, with one big event of 6 verses in the middle. We'll see how that works. But what I want to try to get us to do today is to look beyond just the Acts passage that we're studying, to look at some other scriptures that talk about this same time period in Paul's life. Because we get some insight from letters that he was writing at about that same time. And we'll be looking at a couple of verses from 3 different letters that qualify like that. Now, I want to go back to, you can be turning to Acts 20 in your Bible if you want. I want to just go back and review where we are in the book of Acts, because we're kind of winding down this third section. You know, we divided the book of Acts in 2 for this purpose. Most of the first part featured Peter. Most of the second part features Paul. And we're getting to the halfway point in the Paul section. He went on 3 missionary journeys. And we're coming to the end of the third journey. It'll actually be taking place shortly. It doesn't take place today, but he's starting to move back towards Jerusalem with today's journey. And so we have to have this. Don't worry about the details so much, because there's a lot of places Paul stops. What I want you to see is Paul's third missionary journey. He started on the right side of the map, in the center, at Antioch. And he pretty much heads west, across what is today Turkey. He goes through the churches of Galatia, which he'd been to a couple of times already, like Antioch, Pisidian, and Iconium, and Lystra, and Derbe. He visits those 4 churches again, kind of in the middle of the Turkey there. Then he heads to Ephesus, where we've spent the last 2 Sundays. We're going to look at a more detailed map of the upper left corner here of this map, because that's where he spends all of today in chapter 20, is in that upper left corner. But I also want to point out at the very bottom, there's an arrow that goes across down and to the right. That's heading southeast, and that's heading towards Jerusalem, where Paul's journey is going to take an end and things are going to change. But that's not going to happen at Fairhaven until next fall. We're going to take a break this summer, and you'll have to wait to see what he does. But it's important to understand that where he starts out today, he's going to be going the opposite direction of Jerusalem. Now, I want to move on to the next slide. Let's outline today's passage. If you've turned there, and I'm going to open my Bible, because I haven't done that yet. Acts chapter 20, verses 1 to 16. Now, I broke this into 3 sections. The first and the third section are all about movement, with some other things thrown in, but he's constantly just moving, moving, moving. The middle section, where he's at the church meeting in Troas, one example of a church meeting that we can learn a lot from. And then Paul himself does a miracle at that church meeting, and we'll talk about that when we get to it. So with these 3 sections, we want to make sure that you kind of get the idea. It's going to be travel, church meeting, travel. Okay, that's what we're going to be looking at today. And most of the 10 of the 17 places are mentioned in the first 6 verses. 7 are mentioned in the last 4 verses. So you can see there's a lot of movement going on. Now, we're going to start by reading verses 1 to almost verse 3. And I have those on the slide. So we're just going to dip into verse 3 with this. After the uproar had ceased, Paul sent for the disciples, and when he had exhorted them and taken his leave of them, he left to go to Macedonia. When he had gone through those districts and had given them much, much exhortation, he came to Greece, and there he spent 3 months. Okay. Now, where did we start? Because it picks up there after the uproar had ceased. Well, obviously something has gone on here, right? If you remember last week, or maybe you weren't here, Paul was involved, kind of a riot all about him, but he actually didn't actually go into the riot. The city of Ephesus, they were up, some of the people there were up in arms, and they got the whole crowd going and formed a mob, and they went into the big amphitheater and were chanting for 2 hours. Yeah, that was last week's message. This week, is most things are very different than that. But that's where he was when this chapter starts. He was in the city of Ephesus, one of the main cities that he spent time with in his missionary journeys. And so after the uproar ceases, Paul, it says that he sent for the disciples, and when he had exhorted them. So thinking about that, we're going to talk about exhorted when we get to verse 2, because it talks about much exhortation. And that's a much more exciting thing to talk about than just exhorted. Much exhortation. So we'll get to that. Just before the riot, Paul had, in chapter 19, I don't have this on a slide, but he had said, now, after these things were finished, he's in Ephesus, Paul purposed in the Spirit to go to Jerusalem after he had passed through Macedonia and Achaia, saying, after I've been there, I must also see Rome. And having sent into Macedonia two of those who ministered to him, Timothy and Erastus, he himself stayed in Asia for a while. So Paul had this idea before the riot even occurred where he was going to go next. And Jerusalem was that way, and Macedonia and Greece are that way. You get the idea? He's going to start by going the exact opposite of where he wants to end up. So that's important for us to understand. And he had sent Timothy and Erastus on ahead to prepare the way for him and begin ministering to people there and to get ready for the visit that he was going to have. Now we're going to look at another map, and this is just the upper left corner of that first map I showed you. So the same map, just bigger. Think of this as an upside down letter U, okay? That's what we're looking at, an upside down letter U. I thought about it, talking about a horseshoe that's pointed the wrong way, right? But you don't have horseshoes pointed down. Horseshoes always point up. This one's, you got to have it pointed down. So on the very lower right is Ephesus, where Paul starts this part of the journey. Just to give you an idea of what's going to happen, he's going to go up and to the left, and he peaks at the top there at Philippi, and then he's going to continue around to the left and down the left side all the way to Corinth, and then he's going to pretty much exactly reverse that journey with some slight details that are different. But the idea is he starts on the right side, goes to the top, goes to the left side, and then comes back up and down the letter U and back around. Keep in mind that's what's going on here. These are different regions, but they're all under the Roman Empire. So they all are under subject to Caesar and his rules and regulations. What happens in verses 1 and 2, and just barely into 3 there, he does the whole journey over in just those two verses. So he goes completely around the U one time over and is going to end in Corinth there in Greece. So, but let's now stop and look at this in a little more detail, because there's not a lot of detail in these verses. So while in Ephesus, so this is during the time of chapter 19, Paul wrote the letter to 1 Corinthians. Well, that gives us a whole lot more information about what he was thinking about at the time and what he was doing. But there's a verse that makes it very clear that he was in Ephesus at the time. In chapter 16, verses 8 and 9, he says, "But I will remain in Ephesus until Pentecost, for a wide door for effective service has opened to me, and there are many adversaries." Well, that kind of sounds like his time in Ephesus. And he ended up leaving rather quickly, even though he was planning to stay a while longer. Seems the riot changed his plans a little bit. And the Lord knew that. It wasn't a surprise to the Lord. But verse 1 says that Paul left shortly after the riot. So that's what we know at this point. Now, still, while he was in Ephesus, he made it clear that he wanted to visit the Corinthians. When he wrote them this letter of 1 Corinthians, he basically told them, But I will come to you after I go through Macedonia. For I'm going through Macedonia, and perhaps I will stay with you or even spend the winter. Well, that's from 1 Corinthians 16, 5 and 6. So Paul is telling them before he even leaves Ephesus, I'm coming to you, but I'm going to go through Macedonia. Well, that's exactly what he does as he goes up to the top to Macedonia and back down to Corinth. That's exactly the trip that he's going to end up taking, which he talked about in 1 Corinthians while he was still in Ephesus. Now, we don't know the exact dates that a lot of this took place. Sometimes we know the exact time of year. We'll get to some of that in today's passage. But we do know that it was probably around 55 AD that Paul was in Ephesus. Okay? So just to give you an idea of about what we're talking about, you know, so it's been over 20 years since Christ rose from the dead and the apostles started their work. This is Paul's third missionary journey, and he has just spent at least 2.5 and maybe closer to 3 years total in Ephesus. And so he's really feels like there's an open door there. He's being blessed with what God is doing there. And he goes on to keep serving there. Till that riot happens and the Lord moves him on. Now, it says there that Paul exhorted the disciples as he left Ephesus. And notice it calls them the disciples. Well, what's a disciple? That's a follower of Christ. It's a learner. All right, you could think of it as a student, but not just in an academic sense. A student who wants to learn to follow the pattern that's been set by the leader, and the leader in this case is Jesus Christ. So we have disciples of Christ, and Paul is exhorting them to keep going in Jesus Christ. Now, he says here in 1 Corinthians, he says, if I come to you, Corinthians, I will stay with you or even spend the winter. So I think that's what he actually ends up doing, but it's going to take a year for that to happen. So we're going to see Paul probably spending the winter in these 3 months we talked about in verse 3. Now this will be the last time in the book of Acts that Paul visits the city of Ephesus. When he leaves Ephesus, there's no record in Acts that he was able to go back because he's not in control of his travel arrangements when he's being taken to Rome in the last 8 chapters of the book. Now, it does seem, though, that Paul did make it back to Ephesus eventually because in the book of 1 Timothy, he talks about Timothy to remain in Ephesus like they had been there together. And so probably in around 63 AD, so maybe as much as 8 years later, he does make it back to the city of Ephesus. Now, after he left Ephesus, which is really kind of just the transition from last week's passage, it says that he left to go to Macedonia. Now, to Luke, that's just one straight run in the book of Acts. But if we go to the book of 2 Corinthians, we realize there was a stopover. And of course, the journey's long enough that Paul would have to stop along the way anyway. One of the stops he made that is written about in 2 Corinthians is Troas. Now, to give you an idea, 2 Corinthians, we know it was written after 1 Corinthians, and we're pretty sure it's going to be written while he's in Macedonia. I'll get to that. But so he's talking about this. I basically got to Macedonia, and here's how. He says, now when I came to Troas for the gospel of Christ, and when a door was opened for me in the Lord, I had no rest for my spirit, not finding Titus my brother. But taking my leave of them, I went on to Macedonia. So Acts does not mention a stop in Troas, at least on the way there. He's going to stop in Troas on the way back. In fact, that's where we'll have our major section of today. But we do learn about this stop from 2 Corinthians. Paul had sent Titus to Corinth to get news about how they had received his first letter. If you remember the letter to 1 Corinthians, and we won't be studying that today, there's some harsh things that Paul says to them about divisions in the church and about an immoral situation that they're tolerating. And just different things, you know, that he addresses disorder in their church meetings. He's trying to address those things in a letter, and that's a lot. And if you, the 1 Corinthians has a lot in it that they needed to process. Well, Paul didn't know how they had received that letter, right? He hadn't heard. He could not just get out his smartphone and text them, right? This had to travel by sea or by land and through people, through messengers, and he hadn't heard. And he was hoping Titus was going to bring back news. How are the Corinthians doing? I care about them. I want to know how they're doing. How did they receive my letter? Because I had to correct them on some really hard stuff. Well, when Paul got to Troas, no Titus. He was hoping to meet him there, but he wasn't there. And Paul says, I had no rest for my spirit because I couldn't find him. So Paul decides he's going to move on. Now, that's a journey by sea to cross over from Turkey to Greece today. So guess what? What if Titus was on a ship going the other way? They don't know. They're trying to connect with each other. But they're trying to figure this all out. So Titus is not in Troas. Paul heads to Macedonia. And that matches what we have here in verse 2 of Acts 20, where it says Paul arrived in Greece. And so that's kind of the parallel situation that's going to go on. So Greece. It's where he says in verse 1, he left to go to Macedonia. That's the patches that we're paralleling here. Most likely, Paul's first step was Philippi. Philippi was the first city he had visited in Macedonia back in Acts chapter 16. And you remember Lydia, the seller of purple, who was out by the river, and she believed. You have the jailer, who at first was not real nice to Paul, and then Paul led him to the Lord. What must I do to be saved? So you had a church going in Philippi. And it's possible that Luke, the writer of Acts, had stayed in Philippi all the 5 or 6 years in between these two visits, all the time Paul was in Ephesus, because we don't see him using his characteristic we or us in any of those verses in those chapters after Philippi until we get to today's passage. He comes back on the team, and we'll see where that happens. Now, in Macedonia, so he's at the top of the U. Today it's part of modern Greece. In fact, it's interesting that our brother Simon Vasilio is there right now. They left yesterday. They might be sleepy by now. They were flying last night to go to Greece. And he's from the city of Thessaloniki, it's called today, which is our Thessalonica. So he's there, pretty much should be by now. And so that's Fairhaven's connection. Paul had a different connection. Now, we're going to read something Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians that you might actually find a little bit surprising to see what he says about himself. He's in Macedonia. Titus is not there yet. All right, so Paul gets there first. He still doesn't know what's going on in Corinth. What does Titus have? What news is he going to bring? So Paul finally meets up with Titus in Macedonia. Titus arrives. And here's what Paul says to describe that situation. Gives you a very different tone than just the really fast-paced thing going on in Acts 20. He says, "For even when we came into Macedonia, our flesh had no rest, but we were afflicted on every side, conflicts without, fears within. But God, who comforts the depressed, comforted us by the coming of Titus." Fascinating verses about the Apostle Paul himself. And, you know, he describes himself as fearful, in conflict, and depressed. But in this case, what the Lord did to resolve that is he brought Titus. And that changed Paul's demeanor. That changed his situation. He was comforted by the coming of Titus. I think Paul's being very open here in 2 Corinthians. He's writing about himself. Luke, however, is writing for a different purpose. He's writing a historical record to Theophilus, an official of some kind. Some even think that this record might be part of what was being used to defend Paul in his trial in Rome. because that's the time that Luke stopped writing the book of Acts. But this, they're very different descriptions between what Paul wrote about himself and what Luke wrote. Now, when we talk about the idea of depression, it really carries with it the idea of being brought low, you know, just pressed down. That's the idea. Think about feeling that way. Now, in our society today, it's sort of taken on a slightly different meaning in terms of a clinical depression. That's not, I don't think, what this is talking about here. This is talking about feeling down. That's what he's talking about. And in this case, and this doesn't, so I'm not saying this will solve all depression, but in this case, Paul was comforted by the coming of Titus. In other words, God changed the circumstances, and Paul was comforted. All right. So that's what Paul says himself about his own bout with depression in Macedonia. And, you know, it was kind of based on his circumstances at the time. He was really concerned about the church in Corinth and about Titus and getting the word. And it didn't happen until Titus arrived. And then he was excited. He was comforted that that had happened. So these are the kind of things going on. When you read Acts chapter 20, verses 1 and 2, it just seems like Paul went here, Paul went there. There's a lot more to it that's going on behind the scenes from what Luke wrote. Now, then it says, and we're still just getting into verse 2, when he had gone through those districts. Well, what's he talking about there? He's talking about the districts of Macedonia. It implies that he went to more than one city. Now, Paul, in Acts 16 and 17, had founded three churches in Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. Those are all in Macedonia. So Paul probably revisited all three of those churches that had started five-ish years before when he visited on his second missionary journey. Now, it seems that this is where Paul wrote 2 Corinthians. He met up with Titus, wrote the letter of 2 Corinthians, and we know from 2 Corinthians itself that he sent it back with Titus. So that's the idea of probably the most likely time that he wrote it. And an interesting side note here is that Paul may have also visited a district called Illyricum, not at all mentioned in Acts, but in Romans 15:19, Paul says, so that from Jerusalem and round about as far as Illyricum, I have fully preached the gospel of Christ. Now, Illyricum is what would today be called Albania. And 20-ish years ago, we had some Fairhaven teams in the summer go to Albania and minister there. And there's some missionaries that we know still that are there in Albania. Not from Fairhaven, but others have come through the intern program, for example. And Paul is saying here, at some point in his travels, he's gone as far as Illyricum. It's not mentioned in the book of Acts. But this phrase, when he had gone through those districts, is about the only place it could fit in before he writes the book of Romans. Because once he writes Romans, he's already been to Illyricum. So I think this is probably where it took place. So Paul may have spent as much as a year in this whole area, Macedonia, going off to Illyricum. It could be that that's where he spent most of 56 AD. I'm using an assumption that the events we're talking about today happened between 55 and 57. That's close. I'm not going to guarantee those years exactly, but that's close to when they would have happened. Now, Paul, this is where it says that Paul had given them much exhortation. Isn't that a nice phrase? You know, he wasn't going to just say, oh, keep going for the Lord. No, he was really going to tell them, I'm going to exhort you to keep going for the Lord. Please keep going for the Lord. Don't just come to church and sit and listen. Grow. Just learn. Take it all in. Taste the Lord often and let him enter your heart and change the way you think about life. And exhortation has the idea of urging, giving somebody a little bit of a push to go in a certain direction. It's actually listed as a spiritual gift in Romans 12:8. And guess what? Paul was probably writing Romans right after this, after he'd done all this exhorting. So it all fits in timing-wise as to what he's thinking. Exhortation is something that we want to, it has a focus on the future. It's not about pointing out what somebody did wrong last time. It's about where they can go in the future. How can you improve your walk with the Lord? That's exhortation. And there are some people who have that as a spiritual gift. And when they talk to you, you will sense that the Lord is speaking through them to move you forward in your spiritual life. That's exhortation. And Paul gave them much exhortation, which I think is an encouragement to all the people there. Okay, we've talked about Illyricum, we've talked about 2 Corinthians. There we go. Now, Paul has something else on his mind here. Again, this is barely mentioned in the book of Acts. It gets one little brief thing where Paul is giving his testimony in Acts 24. He talks about this in Acts 24, 17. We're not there yet. But that's it. It's not really talked about in Acts. But this is a major thing going on in both the Corinthian letters. So we're going to read 1 Corinthians 16, 1 to 4. Now concerning the collection for the saints, as I directed the churches of Galatia, so you do also. On the first day of every week, each one of you is to put aside and save, as he may prosper, so that no collections be made when I come. When I arrive, whomever you may approve, I will send them with letters to carry your gift to Jerusalem. And if it is fitting for me to go also, they will go with me. So Paul is basically talking about a special offering. And he was overseeing the collection of this special offering for the needy saints in Judea. This is a major theme in 2 Corinthians. He says that the saints in Macedonia had already given generously to this offering when he wrote 2 Corinthians. Now, the men who accompanied Paul that we're going to see just shortly in verse 4, but we're going to set this up, they were charged by the churches they represented to deliver this offering with integrity. And Paul sends Titus back to Corinth with the letter to 2 Corinthians, of 2 Corinthians, and then Titus is to help them get their offering ready. Paul didn't want it to be a pressure tactic when he got there, so that no collections be taken when I come, right? He wanted it all done in advance, set aside every week as you prosper. That's what he said to have it done. So now Paul had started this when he was in Galatia, it said. And in 1 Corinthians 16, he said, I was there. And then in 2 Corinthians, he talks about Macedonia. And now he's talking to the Corinthians. There's a special offering that is really on Paul's heart for years, it seems. He's collecting this offering to be taken to the needy saints in Jerusalem. Now, note that they were to do this on the first day of the week. Well, that's when the church met. We're going to see that in verse 7 of our Acts 20 passage today. So then it says, Paul had said, when I arrive, well, now in Acts 20 is when he's going to be arriving in Corinth. It says he arrived in Greece. So this is probably at the end of the year in 56 where Paul arrives in Corinth, because it says he spends 3 months there. That's probably the winter that he talked about earlier in the passage. That's a time when you couldn't really travel very easily. He just hunkered down. He had a lot to talk about with the Corinthians. And this was his opportunity to do that. I'm getting on to my next slide. So he spent 3 months there, probably the winter. He wrote the book of Romans from there. So here we've seen on this journey, in these couple of verses through chapters 19 and 20 of Acts, he's written 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, and Romans. And it doesn't say he exhorted the disciples in these areas, but he probably did. That's what he'd been doing lately. And he probably visited churches in Corinth, Centuria, and Athens. The only one we know about for sure is Corinth, but in other places in Scripture, the churches of Centuria and Athens are mentioned, and they're very close to that area. Now, this was finally his chance to talk about, in person, the issues he had raised in his letters to the Corinthians. He said, I do not wish to see you now just in passing, for I hope to remain with you for some time if the Lord permits. And here he's able to carry that out and stay for 3 months. Now let's read the next few verses. I've given a lot of background information. It's going to be now going to fit into what we're going to talk about. We'll be focusing more in Acts now. So Acts 20, verse 3 starts, and there he spent 3 months. And when a plot was formed against him by the Jews as he was about to set sail for Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. And he was accompanied by, and it's going to give us seven names. I'm going to read them because I think the Lord put them here for a reason. He's accompanied by Sopater of Berea, the son of Pyrrhus, and by Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians, and by Gaius of Derbe, and Timothy, and Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia. But these had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. Okay, so there's a plot by the Jews. Oh, that's a first in the book of Acts. Not. Okay. This is actually, I think I'm getting ahead of myself, but we're going to see. One of the things you're going to get to do in your Acts group this week, if you use the questions I prepared, is you're going to trace through all the different times that the Jews have done something against Paul. And that's just so far. Because the whole last eight chapters, that's what the whole thing's about. It's a big plot by the Jews to get Paul taken down. Now remember, Corinth, in terms of plots by the Jews, was where he had been brought before Gallio by the Jews. Gallio was the proconsul who said, I'm not having any of these religious disputes. You guys just take off. And they beat up somebody from the Jews right in front of him, and he did not care. He was not going to get enmeshed. So the Jews there decided when Paul came back, oh, we're not going to bother going to the government authorities. We're going to find a way to do them in ourselves. And so they're watching the ships to set sail for Syria, thinking Paul might get on to go back and be there for Passover. And he didn't do that. He instead went somewhere else. But they could have done him in at the harbor. They could have done him in on the ship. They just had their own plans in mind. And the Lord let Paul know, and he decided to return through Macedonia. So we're already headed back up the side of the U to the top, to Macedonia. Now, the rest of chapter 20 only takes place because in the face of opposition, Paul sought the Spirit who changed his travel plans. Do you like it when your plans get changed? Ooh, rubs me the wrong way, right? But the Lord sometimes needs to do that. Maybe he's protecting us from something. Maybe he's taking us to see someone we wouldn't have otherwise seen. Everything else that we read in chapter 20 only happens because Paul was sensitive to the Spirit and he went a different direction. And this is the 10th time in Acts, and they're listed in the questions today, that Paul has faced opposition from the Jews. All right, it's getting to be rather annoying, I guess before now. But Paul is really having to deal with this all the time. And when Paul goes back through Philippi, which we see in verse 6, he mentions Philippi, Luke rejoins the team because he suddenly starts talking about us and we. So he's going to be back with Paul at this point in the journey. Now, there's a long list of travel companions given in verse 4. But I thought first, let's talk about who's not mentioned. Silas, Barnabas, and Mark. They were on his earlier journeys, but they're not part of this one. Titus. That one's probably the most puzzling to me. Titus is such a major player in 2 Corinthians that's happening all around this time right now. And Luke never mentions Titus anywhere in the book of Acts. He's mentioned in 2 Corinthians, he's mentioned in Galatians, and he's got a book written to him by Paul later. But Titus doesn't get mentioned in Acts. Any of Jesus' disciples? I thought, yeah, think about that. This is all being written about the Apostle Paul and his journeys. Do you think the other disciples were just sitting around doing nothing? There was a lot going on in the world at that time. They went different directions into different places. But Paul's is the one that got recorded for us in the book of Acts. And Aquila and Priscilla, well, they had been very helpful in Ephesus, but they're not with Paul on this journey. And then Erastus, and you go, who's that? Erastus is one of the two people that was sent ahead to this area to prepare. Timothy was sent with him. Timothy is mentioned on the trip back. Erastus is not. So maybe he stays in Macedonia or Corinth someplace. Serving the Lord. All right. So who is mentioned. Oh, no, not, that's, it's back to this verse, backwards, not a forwards. So he mentions seven people by name, but in the yellow, I have the places they were from. Remember how I said there are 17 places named? In, this is some of them right here. He names Sopater of Berea. We don't know anything about him except his dad is, but we know he's from Berea. Well, that makes me think Paul went back to Berea, even though it's not mentioned by specifics. He has two guys, Aristarchus and Secundus of the Thessalonians. Now, Aristarchus had been with him in Philippi at the riot. He's named specifically. Secundus, no other mention in the scriptures. But to give you an idea of who he was, slaves in those days were often given names that were just numbers. We see in the scriptures Secundus, Tertius, and Quartus. Those are slave son number two, slave son number three, and slave son number four. That's how you got your name. So Secundus probably had been a slave, but if he's traveling with Paul, he's probably become a free man. And he probably became a free man twice because he is now clearly a believer traveling with Paul. Then we have Gaius of Derbe. Gary talked last week about the different Gaiuses. I'm not going to go over all that. This is a different one. He's only mentioned here. He's from the Galatian area, probably sent by his church to take care of the offering. Timothy. Well, Timothy's the one where it's not mentioned where he's from or anything because he is mentioned so much already. Timothy has been mentioned a lot since chapter 16. He is also listed as a co-author with Paul on six of Paul's epistles. And he received two more, the letters to 1 Timothy, the letter to 2 Timothy. Paul calls him his beloved son and true child in the faith. He's traveling with Paul at this point. And then there's Tychicus and Trophimus of Asia, most likely from Ephesus. One of them is mentioned, Trophimus, as being from Ephesus later. But we don't know about Tychicus. But we do know that later on, Tychicus would become the letter carrier for the book of Ephesians and bring it back to Ephesus. So those are the guys that are traveling with Paul, escorting this offering. And their service was important to the Lord. Their names got mentioned in the Bible. All right? Now, the things being done for the Lord at Fairhaven Bible Chapel are not going to be mentioned in the Bible. The Bible's done. It's been written. But the things being done by servants of God at Fairhaven Bible Chapel are being written down and noted by the Lord. And this shows us that. He is taking note of all seven of these individuals who had an important job for the Lord. And if you're doing something for the Lord, he's taking note. Now, it's interesting that that he then moves on without these guys, or rather, he sends them ahead. These had gone on ahead and were waiting for us at Troas. So they got on a ship and crossed the Aegean Sea to get to Troas. Normally, just a couple a day journey. But let's go on ahead and see, I think we've talked about all that. Verses 6 and 7. We sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread and came to them at Troas within 5 days. And there we stayed 7 days. On the first day of the week, when we were gathered together to break bread, Paul began talking to them, intending to leave the next day, and he prolonged his message until midnight. Now, here we're back in Troas. This is Paul's third journey to Troas. He stopped there briefly on the second journey. That's where he had the vision of the Macedonian man who said, come over here. So he didn't stay in Troas. He left and went to Macedonia. Then as he was coming from Ephesus up through to go to Macedonia, he stopped there looking for Titus. When he wasn't there, he moved on. Then this is the third visit to Troas. And this is the one where we're going to actually get to know a little bit about the church. Now, Luke has joined Paul. So there's Luke, these seven guys, and Paul all have arrived now in Troas. But they have a rough journey, at least Luke and Paul, taken 5 days to do what normally is a two-day journey. Bad winds, rough weather, we don't know. But what it means, if you put the days of the week together, is that Paul arrived in Troas on a Monday. He just missed the meeting of the church. I think he probably had wanted to be there for Sunday, and he wasn't there. So he decided to wait the whole week in Troas until the church was going to meet next. Now, it's not like they were all sitting around doing nothing. These were probably all working people, some of them even slaves. And so they had to go to their jobs. And Paul is going to wait and meet with them to see them on the following Sunday. Now, at this point, it's probably late April in 57 AD. And how do we know that? Well, we sailed from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread. That's a very clear time of year, the Passover. It's in spring, early spring. Usually late March or early April is when the Passover occurs. So that dates when this is happening, at least to what time of year. And we're going from days, by days from there. We're not at any months at a time here. So Paul gets to Troas probably in late April. And then he's going to meet with the church. Now, it was interesting to me, they always look for the things that aren't written down in Scripture. That would have included the period we call Easter and Good Friday. No mention of that in the book of Acts. Those holidays came along later. Now, it doesn't mean they didn't realize, hey, this is the time of the resurrection of Christ. Maybe they celebrated it every Sunday. But it's just noting, you know, here he was in Philippi, and it doesn't say we celebrated Easter. We remembered, you know, the Lord's resurrection. I think because they were doing it all the time. Okay, we see in verse 7, church by example. And this verse tells us what the church at Troas did. They met on the first day of the week, which was Sunday, probably in the evening after work. And they gathered together. Their purpose was to break bread. And this is talking about the Lord's Supper. Now, in Acts 2:42, we saw four different ways that the church practiced early on. Breaking of bread was one of them. The apostles' teaching was another one. Well, in this case, in Troas, the apostles' teaching was happening right there. They were listening to a long message from the apostle Paul. And they met in an upper room. Now, the point I want to make from some of this is an example to us. This is not a command of how every church must meet every time. Some of it makes sense to carry forward. Breaking bread. Yes, I think the Lord wants us to do that because he gave us a command. Do this in remembrance of me. The apostles' teaching, we saw practice in other places. But I don't think you have to meet in an upper room on the third floor. And I know you all want me to, but I'm not planning to prolong my message till midnight. What is the breaking of bread? Well, many of us practiced it a couple hours ago when we were downstairs at 9:30. It's a time when the Lord Jesus wants us to remember him. It's not about the famous guest speaker. It's not about anything but Jesus. And this is actually a command to do. I think that's important to remember. At Fairhaven, we make that a priority by having a whole separate service just for that purpose each week. Now, we would like to encourage, exhort might be the right word, everyone at Fairhaven to attend that service. That is not designed to motivate by guilt. That is designed to take the example of Scripture and say, that's what we practice. And we would like to do that every week. That doesn't mean it's a legalistic thing and you have to be there every week. But we have people at Fairhaven who don't ever come. And I want to exhort you, encourage you in the Lord to take part in the breaking of bread. If you're a believer in Jesus Christ, he commanded you to do that. It's a very simple thing. He has us take the bread and take the cup to remember him, his body and his blood poured out for us. That's what he desires for us to do. And so I encourage you to accept his invitation and join us at our breaking of bread starting next Sunday, because you missed this week if you weren't there today. The Lord, I think, is very honored when we show up to remember him in the way he told us to do. Now, let's go on to verses 8 and 9. This changes the tone of the meeting real fast. They've gone on till midnight already, but I don't think they've broken bread yet. There were many lamps in the upper room where we were gathering together. And there was a young man named Eutychus sitting on the windowsill, sinking into a deep sleep. And as Paul kept on talking, he was overcome by sleep and fell down from the third floor and was picked up dead. Okay, it's kind of a warm day today. I'm monitoring the windowsills, okay? Nobody there. Nobody's on the ledge of the balcony. That's good. If you're just sitting in your pew, you might fall asleep and I might not notice. Eutychus, however, picked the wrong spot to fall asleep. He was sitting in a third floor windowsill and he was overcome by sleep. Remember, Paul's message went on till midnight. These are people that probably had to work all day. We don't know if that was true of Eutychus or not. He's called a young man, and later on in verse 12, he's called a boy. Now, a young man may talk about somebody all the way up to in their 30s. That's the general idea. Joseph, back in Egypt, was called a young man when he went before Pharaoh at age 30. But when he calls him also a boy, well, that's the word used of Jesus in Luke 2, where he's 12 years old and he stays in Jerusalem at the temple. So both of these words are being used about Eutychus. In my mind, there's a simple answer for that. Eutychus was a teenager, okay? Teenager. Sometimes he acts like a boy, sometimes he acts like a young man, right? And in this case, who is going to be sitting in the windowsill, kind of sitting back a little bit away from the crowd? A teenager, right? Isn't that how it's going to happen? So that's my theory. I base that on 50 years of working with teenagers. And I think this just really fits a teenager. So we have Eutychus, and very tragically, he falls out the window. The name Eutychus translates to lucky, okay? He falls out the window. That's not the part of him that has good fortune, because that's another way to say it, is good fortune. He is, for whatever reason, and it doesn't say whether Eutychus was disinterested or just physically exhausted. The Bible does not comment on that. This is not a message on don't fall asleep in Kevin's sermon, okay? Eutychus fell asleep. It happened. There's nothing we can to do to change that. We don't know if he was a believer yet. We don't know if he was there with his family. Maybe he was there with his parents and just kind of sitting in the back and taking it all in, and maybe he hadn't decided yet if it was for him or not. Now, at this point, he was picked up dead. I mean, it doesn't say he seemed dead. Luke is a physician. I think he's going to know because he was there, right? If he was picked up dead, he was dead. He wasn't just like passed out or something. And nothing is said here about the third of the Acts 2:42 practices, but I'm thinking the church right here and now started practicing some prayer. It's not written, but I think that's what happened. And how must Paul have felt? This young man sitting in the back has fallen out the window and they've just told him that he died because Paul's message went so long. Oh, that would not be good. So reading on, but Paul went down and fell upon him. And after embracing him, he said, "Do not be troubled, for his life is in him." When he had gone back up and had broken the bread and eaten, he talked with them a long while until daybreak and then left. They took away the boy alive and were greatly comforted. Now, Paul has done some miracles in the book of Acts. We saw some in Iconium, Corinth, and Ephesus, at least. But he has never raised anybody from the dead. Actually, it wasn't Paul that raised Eutychus from the dead. It was the Lord that raised Eutychus from the dead, but he did it through Paul. And Paul was the one who got to deliver the good news and lie his body across this young lad. Now, this is a miracle. And Paul's actions remind us, that didn't move, they remind us of the Old Testament prophets Elijah and Elisha, who each raised a boy from the dead by falling on him and embracing him. They each had one of those. It also reminds us of the resurrection that Peter did earlier in Acts, raising Dorcas from the dead. It's not a common thing. Those are the only two that are listed specifically in the book of Acts. Maybe there was a third, Paul being raised himself after he'd been stoned. It doesn't say exactly what happened there. But he didn't, nobody raised him. He just got up and went back in the city. Now the meeting goes on all night after that until daybreak. Pretty exciting stuff. Eutychus is back alive. Let's talk about this. And it says that it changes the wording a little bit. It says that they, instead of Paul talked to them, which he did until midnight, it says he was talking with them. This sounds more like fellowship, the fourth of the Acts 2:42 practices. They fellowshiped together and completed practicing. And they also broke bread. It didn't happen until after midnight when Paul came back up and Eutychus had already been raised. Okay, the church was greatly comforted. This last section is going to go real fast. It's four verses, and it's all just about movement. But we, going ahead to the ship, set sail for Assos, intending from there to take Paul on board. For so he had arranged it, intending himself to go by land. And when he met us at Assos, we took him on board and came to Mytilene. Well, that's just a bunch of cities that are along the right side of that U, coming down from Troas. I'll show you the map again in a second. But it doesn't say Paul did any ministry in any of these places. He just went day, and sometimes they stopped for the night, but they just kept going. And it'll tell us why here in a second. But first, you have to see this picture. That is a view from Assos. Assos is still there today. It's a city built up on a bluff that overlooks, it's actually 800 feet above sea level down there. If you can look down in the left side, there's the Assos Harbor of today. Obviously, I couldn't recreate the one from 2,000 years ago. But that's the harbor today, way down below the city. The city, some of its ruins and some of it is still going on as an ongoing city. And in 2006, I stayed there with a certain person who happens to be in this picture, Eric Wieger. And he was showing me around that part of Turkey. And so we stopped in Assos, and that's where we actually spent the night on a little overnight journey. It's looking south here towards Lesbos Island, which is where Mytilene is. So when we read Mytilene in verse 14, that's where they're headed, is down along that island that you can kind of see on the right. Now, one of the things that it says is that, it's kind of weird here, is that Paul, who had just been up all night, right, talking to people, it says that Paul walked 30 miles the next day when he sent everybody else on the ship. I'm sure the guys on the ship took the offering. Paul wasn't going to carry it by himself. So the guys had the offering on the ship. The ship had to go down and around a point, so it was about a 50-mile journey by ship. But they could do that in a day. Paul walked 30 miles. Seems like he wanted some alone time with the Lord. You know, he's got all these guys traveling with him. The whole thing had just happened in Troas, the whole thing with Eutychus. He's a little bit late for where he wants to be, and he just needs some time with the Lord. That's my theory. It doesn't say. You always have to realize when the Bible doesn't say, I might be wrong. You know, but it seems to me that that's what he was doing. And he keeps going, last two verses. Sailing from there, we arrived the following day opposite Chios, and the next day we crossed over to Samos. And the day following, we came to Miletus. For Paul had decided to sail past Ephesus so that he would not have to spend time in Asia. For he was hurrying to be in Jerusalem, if possible, on the day of Pentecost. Well, I think the year was probably 57 AD. And Paul, if that's the case, Paul would have reached Miletus on Friday, April 29th, because it's being tracked day by day by day. If you notice that, we'll talk about that in a second. But it says here two things. Paul decided to sail past Ephesus. Maybe he got that guidance on that long walk with the Lord that day. Yet, no, I'm not going to stop in Ephesus. Even though I have lots of friends there, they'd all love to see me, but the Lord wants me to get to Jerusalem by the day of Pentecost, which was exactly a month away. It was May 29th. So we're on April 29th, and he's got a month to get to Jerusalem. Paul, and it's interesting to see talk about this idea of hurrying. When he was in Troas, he stayed 7 days so he could meet with the church. You don't get the impression of hurrying. Now he's moving on, and the rest of this journey, you're going to get the impression of hurrying. He skips Ephesus altogether, stops about 30 miles away in another port city called Miletus. And next week we'll see he calls the elders of the Ephesian church to come visit him in Miletus, but he doesn't go to Ephesus. Sometimes we need to hurry to do the Lord's work. At other times we need to wait patiently for him and wait till things line up. Okay, we'll look at the map one more time. We're coming down the right side here to conclude the journey for this week. Troas is in the upper right corner, and then straight down, all by sea, he goes to Assos, Mytilene, a couple other islands, and all the way to Miletus, which is the very bottom right. That's what he's doing in these days. And they're traveling 30 to 50 miles a day by ship, just to give you an idea of how far all that is. A couple points I want to make before we close. In verse 6, Luke begins a section where he starts giving the exact number of days it took for Paul's travels. And he picked that up here again in verses 13 to 16. He tells this day, this day, this day, this day. And verse 16 tells us why. Paul wants to be in Jerusalem by Pentecost. I just want you to remember that thought, because we're not going to conclude it until September, okay? But remember, oh yeah, way back in May, we talked about Paul wanting to get to Jerusalem by Pentecost. And we'll see if he makes it or not. And he was hurrying to make that happen. So we're going to pick those themes up when we get to chapter 21. Now, looking ahead, I just want to give you some idea, because we're about to hit a transition ourselves here. Next Sunday, we've invited a special guest speaker to come, Rick Duvall of Hillview and Grace Bible Chapels down in the San Jose area. He's going to teach us the rest of Acts 20, and we're going to have something next Sunday called an Elder Appreciation Sunday. And I'm not the one organizing this. We got other people to do that. And we think it's scriptural that you would know and acknowledge the elders of this church. So we're going to do that on the day that Paul gives a message to the Ephesian elders about being elders. Then we're going to take a 3-month summer break with messages all summer by our elders, and we have 5 visiting missionaries. Almost the whole missionary crew is coming back this summer. So we're going to hear from all of them. And then we'll plan to resume Acts 21 to 28 in September. And my last slide, just some applications to think about for you. Being sensitive to the Spirit in daily life choices. You know, Paul had to listen to the Spirit. He had to get around that plot of the Jews, and he had to decide where to go this day and where to go that day. He needed to be sensitive to the Spirit. We should apply the same thing. Second one that I already mentioned, obey the Lord's command to break bread. We think that's really important at Fairhaven. We'd love to have everybody at Fairhaven at the breaking of bread. And then the lesson from Eutychus. We don't know what happened to Eutychus. It doesn't say in the scriptures. But use our new resurrected life for Christ's glory. Here's a young man. He still had his whole life ahead of him now, and he suddenly dies. But the Lord raises him up, gives him new life. And that's a picture of what he does for us. How can we use our new resurrected life for Christ's glory? Let's pray. Lord, thank you for the lessons here of Paul's travels and the miracle of Eutychus. Thank you for the church at Troas and the example it gives us. We pray that we will learn from this, Lord, just to take these things to heart. Whatever you put on each person's heart today, I pray that your Spirit might work. In Jesus' name, amen.